when you're a child, having a paranormal experience can be really confusing. It's not something that you have a lot of context on. Sometimes the paranormal experience can be very evident to the adults around you, but as a kid, it may just seem like, oh, this is another one of life's mysteries, milestones, things that I guess happen as I get older, because that's how a lot of growing up is, especially if you're in a setting that you're not used to, going on a family vacation, for example.
My family was driving through the Delta of California from Sacramento towards Eielton. We were driving along the levee about to get into Eielton when the whole family on the side of the levee saw my uncle, who was a very tall, very distinguishable man, very easily recognized. He was very well known around the Delta. He was in charge of maintaining all the boat lifts. Slowed down and waved to him, but he didn't look at us. He knew our car. We had seen him several times. He didn't look at us and just kept walking. And I don't really remember if he was walking or sort of floating, but he just seemed very distant.
So there's your uncle out there on the side of the road. Well, you know, distinguishable reason why he would be there and why he's not recognizing you. But he's there. And obviously everybody's feeling there's something not quite right going on with the situation. Not quite right enough to just kind of keep on trucking.
We had gotten to my aunt's house. They were separated. And we were like, hey, we just saw him walking on the levee. And she was like, that's impossible. And she seemed very distraught. And we were like, well, how is that impossible? We saw him. We knew it was him. And she goes, well, he committed suicide the day before we saw him.
So was it somebody else? Did every single person in that car mistake the uncle that they knew who had very distinguishable features for someone else? Kind of a bizarre thing to have to contemplate when you were pretty darn sure you just saw him on the side of the road living when in fact he was dead. So, bizarre experience, strange piece of information to digest when you're 10 years old. But that may be the end of the story, right?
Few days, maybe a week or two later, we were back home and I was in my bed when I thought that I had woken up and I was in complete sleep paralysis. And as my eyes were darting back and forth around the room, I noticed there was a knee-high fog just lingering around the room, and it was completely unexplainable, and it stayed there for several minutes. I could not move. I was in complete paralysis, and when I was trying to fight the sleep paralysis, I finally woke up and the fog was gone. And I had told my parents about this, and my dad said that he experienced the same thing a few nights earlier but never told anybody.
So uncomfortable still. But you're 10, you're still absorbing things. Things are still kind of new. And especially when you're getting to that age, it's a whole new chapter of newness that you're being surrounded with. So what exactly is going on here? Is this something that happens? Do deceased loved ones come back? Do they give you signs? Did the two situations have anything to do with one another?
I was still thinking about them quite frequently. And I had lights on either side of my bed on nightstands, and they were on a dimmer switch with a on and off switch at the bottom of the dimmer. And every night, right before bed, I'd go in my room, shut the door, dim the lights all the way down, and flip the switch off. Every night, very routinely, never missed a night. I had woken up, it was about 2:45 in the morning, and the lights on the night tables were very dimly on. Not all the way bright, not all the way down, but there was no way that I could have done it.
Enough events for almost anyone, especially someone at a young age, to be convinced of something else being out there in terms of the paranormal. On today's episode of Real Ghost Stories Online, EPP bonus episode 230, we are going to hear the story of a child and his family going through some very, very strange paranormal events. A curse of sorts. As two moms that do not get along end up taking things to quite an extreme. An extreme where one puts a curse on the other. A curse that that torments the mom, and inadvertently, the child of the mother that has the curse ends up getting cursed too, because he didn't listen to mom. The curse has quite an impact. It's an amazing story. It's one of those long ones that you just sit there and you don't want to stop listening to. Also, sleep spiders. What's that all about? You ever wake up in the middle of the night or wake up in the morning and you're cognizant, your eyes are open, you're not having sleep paralysis, but you see a spider in your bed or near your bed, and then all of a sudden it's gone. It seems to be something that happens to a lot of people. Is it a phenomena or is it something else? We're going to talk about that as well. Sit back, relax, and enjoy EPP bonus episode, extra podcast person episode 230 of Real Ghost Stories Online. I'm Tony Bruschi. Stay with us. Curses are something that some may look at and just kind of shake their head and say, that's folklore. That's not true. Even if a culture believes in it, it's a superstition. Others, when they hear the possibility of a curse, take it very seriously, sometimes much stronger than a superstition. In some cultures, it is just a fact of life. It exists. And it's not something to be messed with unless there is a reason to go down that road. Some use it as a defense mechanism. Some use it for good. Others use it for bad. Whether you believe in it or not, our next story has a string of events, a string of paranormal occurrences in it that all trace back to what one would call a curse. A curse that was supposed to be small, a life lesson curse, if there is such a thing, but one that goes far out of control, one that probably should never have been made to begin with, and one that ends up tearing a family apart and causing trauma that never goes away. Take a listen. The story starts when I was 9 years old. I grew up in East Los Angeles, Boyle Heights to be exact. My family and I grew up poor. In my house lived my mother, my sister, my older brother, the middle child, then myself, the youngest, and Bullet, our German Shepherd. My father was away for the better part of my younger years until about my 17th birthday. I tell you this because his absence may have made the forthcoming events much easier to deal with, or better help me to understand. My best friend's name was Juan. He was 1 year younger than me. We spent most of our time, when not in school and on the weekends, playing as kids do. Our houses were all next to one another. If you're looking from above, it would look like there were four rectangles on a large rectangle lot. They were all one-bedroom homes with a living room, bedroom, kitchens that's attached to a very small laundry room, and a bathroom with just enough room for a toilet and bathtub. The driveway had just enough room for one car. The cars had parked at the end of the driveway, where we had our parties. Being Hispanic, we had a lot of parties. Juan's family was from Mexico, and mine was from the United States. We are Latino, Hispanic by blood, but not what most people from Mexico would call a real Mexican. In Los Angeles, there was always a small amount of not what I would call tension, but talk about real Mexicans over Chicago's Mexican-Americans. In my house, we spoke English. There was not a word of Spanish spoken unless my mother was trying to hide something from us. When Juan's parents spoke to me in Spanish and asked me to speak Spanish in their home, I welcomed it with open arms. We lived next door to Juan and his family until I was 12. I was very close to them, going on family trips to Mexico to visit their family's ranches and beach houses. I was like a son to them. so that when the turn of events happened, I was devastated. Juan and I would get into kid battles, as most do, and fight over who won the game or whose turn it was, etc. Dumb kid stuff. But an hour later, we were best friends again. Our mothers, on the other hand, would argue all the time. They had a sort of thing with one another. I mean, they would come so close to having a fist fight, getting in each other's faces and using some really bad words. One day I pushed Juan, and he scraped his knee. Of course, my mother and his mother got into it, but this time was the worst I had ever seen. There were objects thrown, doors slammed, and windows broken. I was told to never play with Juan again and to stay away from them. A couple of weeks later, Juan's family had a birthday party for his younger sister and invited his family from Mexico. Uncles, aunts, and his grandparents. Looking out of my laundry room window, I could see and hear the party. I saw Juan's grandmother staring at our house. It gave me chills. But I figured she was old and creepy, so I paid it no mind. I had seen her once before in Mexico briefly. That evening, there was a knock on the door. It was Juan's mother. She handed a plate of food to my mom and said she was sorry and wanted to make things right. The plate of food smelled so good. I asked my mother if there was enough for me too. Lupe said, "No, I put chili on it." She knew I didn't like chili. The food was just for my mother. My mother was thrilled. A couple of days later, I noticed my mother was concerned about something. She wasn't her joyful self. She and my sister were talking very secretly, and my mother was pointing at her stomach. I remember going to the doctor with her and sitting outside the room waiting for a long time. I knew something was wrong. But every time I asked her what was wrong, she said that she had a bellyache. That night, my sister slept over at a friend's house. I had the bottom bunk bed to myself. During the night, I was awoken by my mother. "Tony, wake up." She had a small flashlight in her hand. Pointing to her stomach, she asked, "Can you see it? Can you see it?" "See what?" I asked. "The blood in my belly button, the blood." She started to pull at my neck, scaring me. I couldn't take it and started to cry. I couldn't see anything. There was nothing there. She hugged me and said, "It's okay, it's okay." Until I fell asleep. The next day, the cat was out of the bag. I asked her what was going on, and she told me that her belly button was bleeding and that no one could see it. The doctor had even pulled out her belly button, but there was nothing wrong. She knew what she was seeing and was really mad that no one else could see it. That night, I got up to go to the restroom, which was no more than 10 feet from my bunk bed. I'd gotten up several nights to go to the bathroom and had never been scared or felt as if someone was watching me. That night I did. I felt ugly. It wasn't the same. I looked at my mom, who was asleep, so I woke up my brother. He was on the top bunk. I told him to go with me. He got mad and said, "It's right there. The light is on. Just go." I asked him, "Please." So he moved over to the end of the bed where I can see him from the bathroom and said, "Go." I looked back at him and walked towards the bathroom. As soon as I opened the bathroom door, I froze. My brother was sitting in the tub, smiling at me. He did not say a word, he just smiled with this weird look on his face. He was dressed the same as he was in bed. I tried to turn to look back at the bunk bed, but I was frozen with fear. That wraps up part one of our story and our preview of EPP bonus episode 230. In part two of our story, what happens with Tony's mom? What does she conclude? What evidence does she find of a curse being placed on her? And what does she do to get rid of it? How bad do things get before the curse is finally lifted? Also, sleep spiders. Waking up in the night or in the morning and seeing spiders around you, and then they seemingly just disappear. Is it just an optical illusion? Is it our minds playing tricks on us? It happens to many of us. We're going to examine that a little bit further. All that and more in the rest of EPP bonus episode 230. To get it, become an extra podcast person, EPP, at ghostpodcast.com. $5 a month is all it is, or you can sign up for a full year. When you become an EPP, you will get a free e-copy of our Amazon best-selling book, Real Ghost Stories, Haunting Encounters Told by Real People. Yeah, it's like a $14 value. You get it for free as a bonus, as a thank you when you sign up. You'll also get access to all 230 bonus episodes of the program in their entirety and access to our advanced episodes weeks before they go public. So lots of great extras right there for only $5 a month. That $5 a month is what supports this program and keeps it on the air. You can also become an EPP through Patreon. The link is there at ghostpodcast.com. Check it out. Keep us on the air. And thank you for the support. Until next time, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.